Unreserved Immigrant is a podcast that explores life as an immigrant in a foreign country. We explore the role of culture, work, and family as it relates to identity. Our guests range from founders, home executives, medical professionals, construction workers, musicians, maids, corporate specialists, and so forth. Unreserved Immigrant is a Sniper Wolf production.
Welcome to another episode of Unreserved Immigrant. Today we are speaking to Asante Makanga, who I have come to also know as Jessica. Asante is based in Cape Town. I will later introduce herself and share a little bit about who she is and what she does. Jessica, welcome to Unreserved Immigrant.
Hi, Pumsa. It sucks about the load shedding, but it just reminds us who we are.
Yes, doesn't it? It reminds us that this is Africa. Jessica, I've tried to sort of introduce you. Jessica, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, maybe what you like to do in your spare time, anything interesting that you haven't shared.
I'm Jessica. I am 26 years old and I live in Cape Town, as you say, but I'm originally from the Republic of Congo. What's interesting about myself is that for a very long time, Afrikaans was my first language.
That is actually very interesting. So Jessica and I met in a coffee shop, both working alongside each other. And I thought she'd make a beautiful model for my brand, Morora. So we started chatting and she disclosed, I'm saying it's disclosed because it was quite big for me, that actually she spoke or speaks Afrikaans. And here's this really dark girl from the DRC looking totally African and has surpassed me in the local language. That was kind of cool and interesting. So I think that is how we actually began talking. Yes, so really an honor to have you here. Today we're basically going to hear from you and hear what the journey was like coming from the DRC to Cape Town, what it was that brought you here and what it's been like since. So you were born in the DRC.
I was not born in the DRC.
Yes, sorry. So I've been taught by people from the DRC and people from the Republic of Congo that this is not the same place. Okay. The one is typically called the DRC and the other is typically colloquially or commonly known as the Congo. So one is much smaller. The Congo is much smaller than the DRC, but they are neighboring countries. Jessica is from the Congo.
I think at some point, I would like to believe at some point, it is just one country. But then because of colonialism, one was colonized by the Belgium and the other by the French. That's where the distinction comes from.
I think I believe that too, because I think part of the mistake, well, for me that I make is because the look is really similar and the culture is really similar. So although now I've started to be able to distinguish when I'm speaking to someone, but I think it's really, really a fine line. It's like Xhosa and Zulu. Just imagining someone just cutting through that and then just making it like separate countries or something.
For us, it's quite easy to distinguish because I think we live there. So it's quite easy to see who is local and who's on the other side of the river.
So you were born in the Congo.
Yes, in 1996.
What did your family setup look like?
My dad worked for the government. My dad was basically a medical scientist. And my mom was in finance, one of the telecommunication companies, and after there for a bank. I grew up in what was considered upper middle class lifestyle in the suburbs, with being the only child for quite some time. Yeah, I lived in the city. I was born in the city. I lived in the capital city in Brazzaville, in a little suburb called Bakongo. All my family grew up in that neighborhood.
What was the thing that made your parents say, we are moving to South Africa?
That can go all philosophy on you, philosophical on you, and so it is because of the greed of man, which it was. But ultimately, it was because war broke out in my country and they needed a safe place to raise their family. They needed to find refuge elsewhere because it just wasn't stable where I was.
Did this war directly affect you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
See, this is why I'm a bit worried about my age, because I hate to speed this up, but because as an immigrant, oftentimes your papers are lost, so you can put whatever when it's been recorded. So therefore, the years are not exactly to the T. But yeah, when the war broke out, my parents had to leave their home and they had to find refuge in the neighboring DRC.
Okay, I've never lived through war. Even a riot is like something I really, really watch in the news.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell how far removed I am from, I guess, what is real life for a lot of people in the world. So when you say to me that war broke out and we had to leave the country and it was your area, what is it sounding like and what is it looking like? Are there missiles like being dropped? Are there men with machine guns right outside your door?
So the Congo was a very stable country. Everything was going according to plan. But then because the Congo is full of natural resources, people from Europe, a particular country from the Europe, wanted some of that resources. And the easiest way to get resources in Africa is to arm one group with arms, with weapons of mass destruction, so that they can be on your side, overtake the current government who doesn't want to give you its natural resources. But then once that group that you're backing wins, once they take over the government, you now have those resources. So that's why war broke out. Hearing stories from my dad, we'd hear on the news that a coup d'etat was coming and that particular country in Europe had sent down arms and weapons of mass destruction. And this was all on the news, on the TV, and there were rumors of it. But then, let's just say one Thursday morning or afternoon, my parents and I were having early dinner rather. We're all sitting and we hear gunshots. At first, we don't panic because, I mean, it could be anything. It could be, God forbid, domestic violence. It could be a little riot. It could be, you know, it could be just somebody lost control of their gun. So we didn't panic at first, but then the gunshots started becoming more frequent. Roads are starting to be blocked. My dad was unable to go to the city because there were tanks in the city and they just started shooting. Mm. My dad comes back home and then my dad tells my mom and my granny and our neighbors, well, war is officially started because they are killing every and anyone who looks like a rebel or was against the government. So then what my family had to do was take whatever was valuable, take all documents they could, a little fold-up mattress, and just get on the road away from their home.
Gosh.
You just had to get out of there because if you didn't, there's going to be a tank coming your way to bomb up your house and kill your family. So you just needed to get out of there. And at this point, we had no idea where we were going, but we just...
Yeah, so just hearing this from you makes me say, okay, when lockdown happened, we thought, gosh, the world isn't always going to be, might not always be so rosy because lockdown showed us that.
Yes.
And then secondly, now there's... That was the disease aspect. Now you're showing that there's also a war or some kind of unrest, kind of disturbance to normal life. So you leave the house and do you go to the airport? Do you go to the bus station? Where do you go?
Initially, a lot of my mom's family work for the government. And when you work for the government, you are privileged to certain things before the local people. So we had contacts to get out of the country and go to neighboring Angola because actually that's where my mom's from.
Okay.
We were going to go there for a while, but once we got word that the airport was occupied by, let's just call them soldiers, terrorists at this point, it was occupied. No one was able to board a plane. So, for example, if South African Airways was parked on the tarmac. It was grounded. There were missiles in front of it, so no one was allowed to go. I think the only people that were given a chance to go were high up in government and that had connections with the rebel soldiers. So we couldn't fly out. We couldn't take a boat out because all ports were closed as well. Just every major entryway into the Congo was blocked by soldiers. I don't know if they lost their mind, but they would, if you were going to an argument with a soldier, they could take a machete and just chop your head off. So you'll try to avoid every point of entry at this point. But what we didn't know is that my mom's family had actually gotten to escape, but because we lived a few miles away from them, they were unable to come and fetch us. So my dad and my mom and my granny and our neighbors, we just decided to just walk.
So you did this walking, and I'm gonna assume that you had packed some stuff from the pantry and the fridge. So now, do you have any idea how old you are, at least?
This is how I know I wasn't really born in 96, because this is, the war was 98, right? The war was 98, and this is a statement and a picture that's always in my head. I always remember asking my mom, why are people lying in the streets when we are walking? And why are people eating on leaves? And I thought this was camping. It turns out those were dead people, and eating on leaves was our plates. So the bag that my parents packed, because my dad was in the medical field, he packed a whole bunch of medication. He packed some of the documents that he could hold onto. My mom had lots of gold jewelry on her. And at the time, paper currency wasn't really of value because the economy was dying anyway. So what was of value was gold and diamonds. My mom packed a whole bunch of jewelry. And my mom was pregnant at this time. So
my goodness.
She might have packed a little nappy bag in case she had given birth. And what else did we pack? And I remember we had to pack like a portable mattress. And this is what you carry on your back and on your head. Everyone had to play their part. You carry, if everyone has something on their back and everyone has something on their head, and you just start walking.
Just as a mom, it sounds like you were at least older than 5. 3-year-olds are not asking those questions. 5 upwards are asking those questions. And a 9-year-old would know that what's yes. actually happening. Yeah.
That's pretty accurate, yes.
Okay, and you walked.
So the internet says 460 kilometers around about that.
Whoa. How are you doing this? Do you know if your dad, I'm sure he had to try and put you on his back sometimes.
No, my dad couldn't. It's an ongoing joke that I had what we call it light bulb. So when you've walked a very long time, and as a child, your feet are fragile, you feel the back of your feet, it inflates like a light bulb. And after a while, you have to walk on your tippy toes.
My goodness.
Do you know, my dad is carrying the bulk of the items. He has an elderly mom. My mom is pregnant. She's heavily pregnant because my mom gave birth during the war, by the way. So she's heavily pregnant. She can only carry so much. So as a child, you want to help your parents and you want to act tough because you're a big girl now, and you just carry on. And what my parents had to do, this is so sad. So when those light bulbs inflated on the back of your feet, you have on the heels, you had to pop it, let out whatever was in there, and then really, really wrap it so that you don't feel the pain. And so we walked and walked and walked.
Oh my gosh, this is... Oh. My assumption was that you were the most vulnerable because you were the baby.
No.
But context informs... or vulnerability to an extent. And it makes me think of like poor people, you know, like sometimes we're like, why would you let your, or why weren't you there? Or, you know, but there's a whole context and a whole life, which maybe means that the child can't get the care that you imagine the child deserves. But you don't realize that what you're adding to the context is like a perfect situation where everything is working as it ought. Between you and your dad, you were like the strong two, you know?
Yes. My mom posed the most risk because pregnant woman and babies were being put into a mortar and they were being ground. It wasn't the best to have a baby. And this was just almost as a sacrifice the soldiers would make in order to win the war. So being pregnant and having to hide that, and because, you know, anyone could sell you out for a piece of bread. If a soldier tells someone else, I am looking for this type of person, or I want to rape this type of person, and you are starving and they're offering you a piece of bread, it's really easy to test your morality there and betray people for that piece of bread. So we had to be very, very careful on how we acted, how we moved. My dad had to appear not too strong in order not to intimidate the soldiers, to make him think that he was a rebel maybe. But then also you couldn't be too weak because you had to support the family. It was a very stressful time, especially when my dad tells me back about those stories. Because one thing my dad wants me to remember, and he wants this to be part of my identity, because it did happen. So when he tells me about this, and I hear from his side, he was like, yeah, this is what we went through.
We don't hear enough of this war. Before you, I have friends from the Congo. I've interacted, yeah. I've laughed with these people, and not a single one of them has told me about this. But I also don't know what it's like to be a child of war. By child of war, I mean someone who's come out of that, because maybe you've come out of it and it's behind you. You don't necessarily find it a thing that you just bring up in casual conversation.
I think I'm more of an anomaly, because when I speak to my brothers and my cousins and just like teenagers, even friends that I've met here as well from the Congo, have never spoken about this. I don't know if it's taboo to speak about it, or people are just traumatized. I guess I do, because my dad likes to write, and I'm very inquisitive, so I'll ask him. And also, I've been through therapy, so it's easier for me to speak about this. And therapy is not something that's prevalent in my culture. So when I've met friends from the Congo and I want to address this, it's almost shut down. I never get the answers I ever want. Like, I ask them, like, how was your experience during the war? And they were like, well, war was war. It's over now.
Yes, where you would have wanted a discourse like we're having right now.
And another thing with the media is, remember the Congo, even though it's stable right now, we don't have freedom of speech. We do not speak against the president. We do not speak against anything. So it's very hush up when it happened, and that's it.
So you walked these many kilometers. Were you then finally where?
To the neighboring DRC, because at the time, the capital city of the DRC was quite stable. But the distance, the way that we were going to walk, and by walking, it would have been to walk almost from Cape Town to Johannesburg. So that's a long walk. We needed to stop along the way. My dad comes from a very well-to-do family. And even in his village, there was a house there that was properly built, a pharmacy and a nearby clinic that his family had built. So that was the goal, because it wasn't targeted yet. So that was the plan, to go join my dad's uncle, because he was there with, I think he didn't have anyone else living with him. He was just looking after the properties. So that's where we went to.
Your goal was to walk to your father's homeland. So this to me now is sounding like Walking Dead. And we are walking to get supplies, or yes, the place that is safest, like from whatever the apocalypse.
Absolutely. So, for example, on our way, if we had found a deserted house and we thought that it was safe enough, that there weren't footprints of soldiers or they weren't left behind bullets, that was an indication that it was safe. So you go into the house, and maybe if there's no one there, you loot whatever you can and you keep going, or maybe you stay there for the night.
I was just using something from TV. Like, I didn't actually expect you to even go as
far as... No, that's exactly how it was. The strong survive, and sadly, the weak don't. So.
Yes, exactly like it, you know? Okay, and you get to this place and it's not vandalized, it's still intact.
Yes, we found my uncle there, and then I think maybe, so fun, like I said, we really grew up well, because our nanny was still there from way back. and she had a growing child about 11 years old, because I remember him being my friend. And I really remember it because he had a strong stutter, but he was a friend to play with. And the house was still, it needs a bit of work, but according to most standards, it would be lower middle class. It was a big house. We had a well for water. We needed to find animals so we could breed them to have food, everything else.
And this point, your mother's pregnancy, what's happening?
That's exactly when my brother was born. It's a long-standing joke in the family that my brother was born in the jungle, because exactly that's where he was born.
Wow. Okay. What did they name him? I'm just wondering if he was named anything.
No, he has a generic Christian Catholic name.
What a waste of an experience.
So when I say we had a clinic, I use the word clinic very loosely. Maybe there was an empty building that was just called clinic because that's where sick people found themselves. But there weren't any real equipment. But my mom gave birth as many other African women in the jungle has given birth. And using herbs and hot water and sterilizing things only they know how to.
So she had a home birth, but not fancy.
She got help from the woman in the village because, I mean, they've been doing this for years, so they knew what to do. It wasn't anything strange to them. It was strange for my mom, definitely, because the first birth was in a suit at a hospital, and her second birth was just assisted from the woman in the village, who was ill for quite some time because I think just not getting the essential vitamins and also having a stressed pregnant woman really played a big role.
Was your brother, no complications with him?
No complications, no. Because, you know, on the road, my mom bartered a lot of food and whatever she could for her. Like she sold her, bartered her necklaces, her diamonds and her gold for pieces of fish, maybe for sterile gloves, you know, just in preparation for her child. So no complications. And also my dad being a medic was good help.
And then you stay in this place, a little bit of paradise after all of this. Do you think you have an idea of how long it was? And then where did you go next?
The reason why I know it was a long time, because we started to regain a little bit of normalcy, if that's the word. Things started going back into normalcy, there we go, into regular routine. I remember my dad tutoring me and tutoring some of the kids from the village. I remember activities such as sitting by the fire and my mom cooking. I remember regular things like speaking to whichever neighbors we had. I remember gardening with my parents.
Okay.
You just started looking very normal. It could have been 3 months because routines were set, you know?
Okay. As a South African here, I have to ask, did you really bathe in the river?
I wish there was Instagram or Facebook at that time. I bathe in the second biggest river in the world. We actually bathed in the Congo River because that's where one, it was the freshest water, it was the cleanest water, and it was just so beautiful. Because we are in the jungle and this is untapped land and there were wild monkeys, there were anaconda snakes, it was bad. But because you make friends with the village people, they teach you how to spot these animals. They teach you how to interact with the animals. They teach you how to interact with the land and not how to be invasive of it and how to live cohesively and how not to get attacked. The safe spots on, because sometimes like the river creates these little oases that looks like jacuzzis or hot tubs. So it's warm water and animals often don't like that. So that's safe maybe to go bathe.
And you still have the knowledge. This is so nice.
I quite enjoy that part of my life, you know, because my parents were really, really good at hiding what was happening in the world. And I think they were really stressed because we had the radio, but I was sheltered from that. I thought this was an amazing adventure. I mean, I could go swim, I could do all these things, and I had friends around me, you know.
If you enjoyed this podcast, remember to subscribe and share. If you would like Sniper Wolf Media to tell your story, or perhaps you'd like to donate or partner with us, please send an email to janice@sniperwolfmedia.co.za. We would love to tell your story.